Okay, so we are on now step 10. Continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Obviously, this is an ongoing process. For years and years and years, I would tell anyone who would listen, if I did this regularly, my life would be more manageable, and I'm not willing. Or I'd be doing it. Then about 5 years ago, I joined Al-Anon and got a sponsor in Al-Anon, and she said, holy cow, your life's incredibly stressful. I think you ought to start writing 10 gratitudes a day, every single day. So before I go to bed, for the last almost 5 years now, I have, it might be six actually, because I really didn't pay close attention. I have all the journals, I could go back and look. I write approximately a page, sometimes many more, sometimes just under a page, 10 things that I'm grateful for. And one of the things I frequently assign people I sponsor is to write a letter of gratitude toward the thing that's driving you crazy. For example, I actually almost got fired for this one, but I had a woman who had fibromyalgia, and she talked about it constantly. And it was a burden, and she carried it around, and she felt victimized by it. And so I gave her the assignment of writing a thank you letter to fibromyalgia, and whoo, that was not a happy camper. She was really, really, really mad at me. But she did it. And it shifted her relationship with her illness so that she no longer felt victimized by it. I've also had sponsees who are feeling, anytime someone's feeling victimized, I encourage them to find the gratitude in that relationship or that situation. And I do discern, I could use the word judge, the quality of the gratitude. So I assigned another sponsee the task of writing three gratitudes about the situation between her and her brother when things got nasty after her mother died. And her gratitudes consisted of things like, I'm grateful I no longer have to have a relationship with you. I'm grateful that your behavior clarified why I can't have a relationship with you. And I was like, well, okay, write three more. And we got those, and I said, okay, write three more. Until they were things like, I'm grateful that I now can see how the way I interacted with Mom alienated you before Mom died, so that once Mom was gone, we had nothing left between us. Ta-da! That's what I'm looking for. And it's hard for me to tell you exactly what the difference is, but there's a responsibility and an accountability piece of it, a true gratitude for what's happening as opposed to a gratitude for the justification it gives me to do what I want to do. And for me, it's very much a feeling that I get when I see the gratitudes that I'm looking for. That really marks that kind of shift in your relationship with the situation or the other person. So that's my way of doing a 10th step. It has, in fact, served me as I expected it would. I'm grateful that I can see that my relationship with my secretary is shifting in a way that I'm not comfortable with. Huh, okay. And I can see it really early so I can go address that change and let's talk about it. It probably resulted in my best friend, who was my paralegal for 8 years, quitting in March. Because I got on it right away and we had conversations and she said, I'm leaving. Okay, that wasn't what I was hoping for. And it's life has changed. I can tell you that firsthand right now, life has changed. And sometimes it's what I wanted and sometimes it's not what I wanted. But even the great stuff that I'm so happy about won't last. In some way, it'll change. Might be better. Might not be. The agony I'm going through with my 19-year-old, almost 20-year-old son is going to change. I'm hoping it'll be better. But it's going to change. It might get worse first in order for him to be motivated to stand up and live his life. And, you know, I have no right to eliminate my children's pain. My pain has been my best motivator I wouldn't do what I do in this program if it weren't for pain. Trying to avoid pain, trying to get out of pain. I mean, I ate to avoid pain. But I've learned that if I can do the steps and I can work my program, I get out of pain in a whole different way. And I'd much rather do that than wallow around in pain. And I respect it. It's a really, really, really capable motivator. So I have my little, this started in February, and the one before this is the one I went to Peru with, and it's incredibly valuable to me. I cherish my, it tells me what I did. I documented, today will include jumping in the lake, including getting a rash on my butt from a butt flop. That hurt. And I probably won't do that again until I forget. Then I'll do it again. But for me, this is my book of gratitude. Yes, yes. And I do 10 a day. And for a long time, my gratitudes included I'm grateful for X even though it sucked. Basically, that was the format of many of my gratitudes. And after about 2 years, I finally said, no more of those. You just get to be grateful for it. And the even though it sucks is just, I don't know, it felt wrong to me. It was that same kind of gratitude I sometimes get from people I sponsor that doesn't feel really authentic as a gratitude. And so I eliminated gratitudes that said, I'm grateful for whatever, even though it was terrible. Because it was like taking the gratitude away. I give you gratitude and then I take it away because it was really terrible. It was like, no more of those. And for me, that's the way my program works. One of the, and this is kind of shifting to the 11th step, so I'll go ahead and read it. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. For me, that's any spiritual practice I do, prayer, meditation. Some of my spirits, I have added meditation 3.5 years ago, and because of the ministry course I took, I did a lot of study on meditation and different kinds of meditation, and there was one sentence in one book that rang true to me, and that was, look with your third eye into your heart. Oh, that struck me. So that's often the meditation I do. It's like spend time focusing with my third eye into my heart, and from my experience, anytime I slow Trish down enough to be seated long enough, and I focus on my heart, I realize it hurts. It hurts almost all the time. I just don't pay attention to it. I just get busy and I get going. And I know that if I can stick with this long enough, it will go through its process and the pain will be released. That's what I believe. And in fact, I got some Reiki last night and woke up this morning. It was like I did my meditation before we started and I thought, huh, my heart doesn't hurt today. Oh, and then it did. But at first it didn't, and it was like, I found something that can work. This is great. And it hurt less. So you know, every little bit for me is progress. If I get offered, you want Reiki? Yes. I don't really understand it, but yes. Yes, I want that. You want to jump in the lake? Yes, I want to jump in the lake. That was fun. Jumping in the lake is a spiritual practice because one of the things I do to myself, and this started when I was little because I was the super responsible kid. I wasn't the super student. I was a super caretaker. I took care of all of my siblings and my parents, if they let me. But one of the things I do is talk myself out of, you know, it's not practical to jump in a lake. You're going to have a wet swimsuit. That'll be a pain in the butt. You'll have to be, you know, planning. And then, you know, your feet will be sandy, and then you'll make a puddle on the floor, and then your hair will be wet. And then I'm like, I'll go in, but I won't get my hair wet. Who are you? What planet do you live on? I want to get my hair wet. I want to jump in the lake, not walk in slowly so my hair doesn't get wet. And so then I thought, well, I just won't go. And I won't have to deal with any of those things. But I thought, If someone says, you want to jump in the lake, I'll say yes. Thank you, Charlotte. We're sitting at lunch. She goes, anybody want to jump in the lake? I'm yes. Yes, I'm in. Yes, I can no longer, and I'm going to get my hair wet. And it was wonderful. Butt flop and all. It was really fun. And I would have missed that. And I would have talked myself out of it being important. And that's some of the amends I make to myself now. Just because it's fun and frivolous does not mean it's not important. It is important. And giving myself that grace allows me to give other people a similar grace. It's like, if you want to go do something fun, go do something fun. That's important. As far as we know, we only live once. We're here now, might as well enjoy. One of the practices I do is I get so busy in my head that I lose track, and I can go for days without prayer or meditation. Prayer as in on my knees in the morning, the formal get myself started prayer. My day is filled with, okay, God, now what do I do, which I consider a prayer, or what do I say now? But one of the things I've developed is I have post-it notes on my mirror. I have two mirrors right next to each other, a bigger one and a little one. They both open. And on the bigger one, I have post-it notes. Pray on my knees, meditate, go to a meeting, service work, sponsoring, being sponsored, calling my sponsors, reading Al-Anon and OA literature, just a whole slew of spiritual practices that I can do. And as I do them, they go on the other mirror. Hiking is on my list. And as I do them, they go on the other mirror. Now, hiking, if I do at least once a week, it gets to stay on that mirror. Calling my sponsors comes back every night. Writing my gratitudes is on my mirror, and it almost always stays on the one that means I did it. Calling my sponsors, I move back and forth every day, and then they stop sticking, and I'm like, I did a lot of that one, that's great. And I do another one. So for me, it's these little post-it notes that help me be mindful about what matters to me that I can forget. I forget. I don't know how I do that. It's fascinating that I can forget things that are so important to me, and I can. And so part of what I do is set myself up for success by putting them on the mirror. Drove my husband a little crazy. But now I have as many as I want on there. And, you know, cleaning the mirrors, you just move them all to the top, clean the mirror, move them all back down. Clean the mirror. And it does happen occasionally. So, and for me, those the things I put on the mirror change all the time. All the time. And I usually expand, and I usually ratchet up, which is how my program works. It's progressive. A year ago, it was read OA literature, and a separate one was read Al-Anon literature, and now it's read OA and Al-Anon literature. So I don't get to move that one unless I've done both. But a year ago, I could move one and then the other. I had more stickers moving. But it's just a slow progress for me of being mindful of the process of my spiritual practices. Prayer and meditation are really key. They're absolutely a foundation for me. Prayer is something that happens all day, every day for me. I remember situations when my older son was about seven. And it was a different story when he was three. When he was about seven, I can't remember what was happening, but I lost my patience with him. We were in the kitchen, and I picked him up by his arms, and I put him on the countertop. Forcefully, and realized as I placed him there, roughly, that I had just touched my son in anger for the first time. And that really was not okay with me. And I didn't know how to stop doing this. Where do you go from here if you don't, like, blow up? And I was horrified. And what I said was, okay, God, now what? And what happened was, I didn't do it. My arms wrapped themselves around him, and I whispered in his ear, I am so grateful to be your mother. And we both started crying. And I was like, whoa, thank you. That's how you can end it, without violence. Huh, didn't know that. God is working in my life when I say, huh. It still gives me shivers. I'm like, that was a powerful moment. I just love him. I knew my program was working when he was about three, and he was in the kitchen, and he dropped a glass and broke it. And I headed around the kitchen. I was mad. Headed around the kitchen, and I was mad. And he looked up at me, and he said, "It's okay, Mommy. I'm not hurt." And it just stopped me cold. It's like, he's doesn't have a clue I'm mad. I've never gotten mad for something like this before. This is not the household I grew up in. That's the program. Because otherwise, I just repeat what I learned and what I experienced. I don't have to do that. I have choices. I don't even have to know what to do. All I have to do is, okay, God, now what? Right in the middle of the stride. And somebody mentioned over lunch, which was really helpful for me to remember. If I'm overeating, or if I'm raging, or if I'm out of control, which usually means I feel like I should be in control, which I'm never in control, but if I'm out of control in whatever way, I don't have to wait till tomorrow to fix it. I don't have to wait till tomorrow to start over. I don't have to wait till Monday. I don't have to wait till the first of next month. I don't have to wait till the first of next year. I can stop right now. Okay, God, reset. I need help. And usually it doesn't take more than that for me. And I don't even have to mean it. I can have my fingers crossed. Okay, God, I need help now. I really don't want it, but I'm saying it because they told me to. And usually, before I've done explaining why I really don't want the help in the first place, I've got it. And I'm out of where I was. So I cannot not overeat if I'm not in fit spiritual condition. If food is talking to me, I need to work on a spiritual practice of some kind. If I'm obsessing about food, I need to work on a spiritual practice of some kind. And service, I've heard that mentioned before here. Just even if all you can do is pray for another person, do it. Get yourself out of your own head and your own misery and focus on me and self-obsession into anyone else. Put my energy toward anyone else. And it stops that crazy stuff in my head that makes me want to eat. So I'm hoping that we can kind of focus on 10 and 11 and then we'll move on to 12. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to talk about. Of course, I'm sure that it could be better than it is. And it has had the benefit to me that I expected, which is that I see things in my life sooner because I'm focusing on them. If I'm just willy-nilly going through life and thinking, huh, that was a little bit of a rub with you. Huh, oh, well, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. It didn't hurt that bad. I don't really need to do anything about it. Oh, there was another one. Huh, you're just having another bad day. Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. But if I'm doing my inventory and I'm writing gratitudes, I'm like, I'm seeing a pattern here. I'm seeing a pattern. I'm grateful for seeing the pattern, and this is what I need. And sometimes it goes on for page and a half till I get to my part in it, if there's my part. Or I'm just like, I need to ask because I'm really confused. So, 11, for me, is a walking prayer. Yes, I do lots of just simple gratitude. I'm grateful for having a lake to jump in. I'm grateful for a body that can jump in a lake and get back out again. Yes. So I include simple, straightforward gratitudes as well as the more sophisticated, complicated, I'm grateful for this thing that's making me uncomfortable. Yes. That's a good thing. Yeah, thank you. Don't want to imply that I hunt through my day only for those things that are uncomfortable and write gratitudes for them, because that's not at all what I do. There are many days when I can just be grateful. And I don't have to twist myself to get there. Prayer and meditation, of course, well, not of course, I shouldn't say it that way. Meditation is when I shut up. And I hold myself still long enough to see if there's anything that I need to hear. And there usually is. It might just be, relax. I've got this. Go. Oh, I forgot. I was thinking I was in charge again, sorry. Just an opportunity for me to slow down and listen. Hear if there's an area of my life that needs some kind of focus. It's my most recent spiritual practice is meditation, recently added, on a consistent basis. Okay, so getting me to slow down is hard for me. What I did was I went to the dentist and I got a 2-minute timer. It's a little plastic 2-minute timer. Can you see where I'm going here? And so people are like, you have to do 20 minutes first thing in the morning and last thing at night. I got 2 minutes. I'm good with 2 minutes. It's my minimum. I now have a one that is probably about 10 minutes as a bigger timer. And then I sometimes just set my alarm on my phone, because then I don't have to think about looking to see if it's not done yet. Because I do keep my eyes open slightly, but not focused enough to see whether I'm down, and then I find myself looking at the little, because it's literally an hourglass. The one from the dentist is pink and plastic. It's approximately 2 minutes. I guess that's how long you're supposed to brush your teeth. But I meditated for a long time, for 2 minutes. And often I would stay longer. Sometimes I flip it over. Sometimes I flip it over again. But what was important was that I get myself in that chair, and I get myself, my butt and my head, in the same chair at the same time, and just let myself get centered in that way. So for me, meditation is a very powerful practice. And as I do it more, it gets more doable, so to speak. Prayer is ongoing. For me, it's almost constant. Okay, now what do I do? Okay, now what do I say? Okay, so now what do I do? Okay, so now what do I say? How do you respond to that? Huh. And just spend time wondering and waiting to see if anything comes through. And more often than not, like with my son when he was 7 and I put him on the countertop, things come through me that are not mine. I am phenomenally grateful for them, but I cannot claim them as mine. My only part was willing to ask. It happens all the time. That became a regular part of my law practice when I would meet with clients. Usually someone's died, and I'm helping with the administration of the estate, which I love doing. I love holding space for families as they reconfigure after someone's died. And so I'm meeting with my client and maybe another family member, and they say, well, what about fill in the blank? Name a person who always feels victimized and who's going to throw a wrench in this. What about them? How can we prevent them from making a problem? Well, I can tell you legally, there is nothing you can do to prevent someone from making a problem. And what came to me when I paused, pray for them. Do the thing out of the big book where you pray for them for everything they want, you would want for yourself. Pray for them. And every single time that person crosses your mind, commend them to God, wish them everything you would want for yourself, and let them go. And since that came into my practice, I have yet to have one of those people be a problem. It fascinates me. Yes, I'm not allowed to say that one because I promised I wouldn't swear. But yes, pretty much those, yeah.
That's how they start off, but they end up,
it's a very powerful practice to commend someone. And for me, it's, and I know that a lot of people are hearing me say something I'm not saying, which I'm not necessarily saying, I'm not exclusively saying, and please forgive me if this rubs you wrong, but I'm not saying pray to the Christian God for salvation for that person. And I know that people translate it. And when I first started talking to people about prayer, I felt the need to explain to them that I wasn't talking about what they thought I was talking about. And then I realized it's really none of their business what I'm talking about. They can translate it any way they want. I don't have to be responsible to make sure they know exactly what I mean and what I don't mean. And have this, like, weird, they're staring at you like, what are you talking about? Oh, I think I'll shut up now. So I learned, you know, you just let it go. I'm saying what I'm saying, and you're hearing what you're hearing, and I can see that there's a difference, and I don't have to fix it. So for me, prayer is just this ongoing, now what? Now what? It's more than that also, because there's the formal get on my knees in the morning. I say the serenity prayer and steps 1, 2, 3, and 11. I'm powerless over life, and I name all the people I care about. My life is unmanageable. I believe you can restore me to sanity. I decide here and now for today to turn my will and my life over to you. And then 11, I pray only for knowledge of your will for me and the power to carry that out. So I do those on my knees in the morning. Another piece of this that's important to convey is, if somebody had told me when I came into program almost 20 years ago, you need to do this and you need to do that and you need to eat this and you need not to eat that and you need to do this and you need to do that, I'd have said, see ya, bye. I would not have stayed. So Do what you're willing to do. And when you're willing to do it, you will be doing it. Keep coming back no matter what. Do what you're willing to do. And it will grow. It just does, in my experience. So, I would like to hear